real-time check-in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Here's Steve Bertrand.
And here we are in the Allstate Skyline studio. It is a Friday afternoon in Chicago. Welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch. You heard Orion mention the story about Les Moonves and the expose that apparently is going to be published in the New Yorker coming up sometime soon. A little bit later in the program, we're going to talk to Alicia Driscoll, who is the founder of a company called Evolve Her. It's a female-only shared workspace. And I've been spending a lot of time today trying to figure out how I feel about it. I still don't know. In the studio with me now is Andrea Haines. She's the editor of Blue Sky Innovation for the Chicago Tribune. Welcome back, Andrea.
Thanks, Steve.
All right, let's start with Grubhub. And I have a hard time saying Groupon or Grubhub, but Grubhub had big numbers this week, and they've got big plans coming up.
They did. They had just a great week. I mean, they were kind of a bright spot in some of the earnings reports this week. They reported very strong earnings, up 50% over the same quarter last year. Their stock price kind of skyrocketed from about $110 to $135.
Wow.
So, yeah, they just continue, you know, this company out of Chicago that grew out of the University of Chicago, it just continues to go, go, go.
And they purchased this company Level Up, which is another, it's a platform that a lot of restaurants use for their own delivery?
It is, and they use it also, you can place orders for it for pickup, so it kind of gets them into that. And locally, one of our local favorites, Potbelly, is on that platform, so that brings Potbelly into Grubhub's portfolio in terms of ordering.
And they're continuing to expand, right? They're hoping for another 100 markets by the end of this year?
They are. They've done some things like partner with Yum Brands, which is the parent of Taco Bell and KFC. And near us, they've gone into Rockford and South Bend, and so they're trying to get into some cities that in the past haven't had services like Grubhub.
We hear about Grubhub all the time, but are there competitors? I mean, there are other delivery services, right?
But anything there are. There's a good handful, you know, but they just seem to continue to go on and then, you know, acquire as they go and grow, grow, grow.
Right.
You know, Seamless is one of the big ones that they merged with a few years ago.
Maybe that will be my resolution this weekend to use. I've never used Grubhub.
You should give it a try. See what you think. It might open up some new doors for your home delivery dinners.
I guess I just like to get in the car and go pick up my pizza.
Yeah.
So I need to break out of that habit. Because I'm the sort of guy who listens to CDs at home.
Oh, yes. Well, there's some deals for you then.
I love this story about Best Buy. It's really a bigger story about CDs in general, but Best Buy now is putting all their CDs in the clearance bin.
Yes, the CDs are in the clearance bin. So for $5.99, you can get a lot of your probably favorite music in CD form.
When's the last time you bought a CD?
It's been a long time, I have to admit. Long time. I do still own a lot of them, though.
Do you listen to them, though?
You know, I don't really.
No, me either. No.
Yeah.
I have. They're going to go to my unlistened to collections of music. I have two Apple crates of albums.
Oh, yeah.
That I can't get rid of, you know, because there's such memories with them. I don't listen to them. And now I've got, years ago, I took them all out of their cases and put them in like an album folder.
Yep.
So I have that, but I've got hundreds of CDs that I just don't listen to.
Yeah, same. And I did that. I took them all out of the plastic cases. I put them in, you know, and I still don't use them. So it was probably a wasted exercise.
But CD sales are dropping big time. Albums, literal vinyl is going up.
Yeah, vinyl's had kind of a hipster resurgence, right? So vinyl's been up a little bit. It's accounting for 10% of sales, whereas CDs are only 6%. However, like, I feel like CDs, 12% of sales,
right.
Slipping 6. And it's still a $1 billion business, though. There's still $1 billion of CDs being sold. Yeah.
And so who's buying them?
You know, I guess it's people that still want that liner notes, even though, you know, it was supposed to be that CDs were going to ruin the liner notes, but now it's the only way you get that, right?
Isn't
so
it funny?
Still
right,
is the way that you kind of now get that physical, tangible piece of music and, you know, art in your hands.
And I suppose if you have an older stereo where you don't have streaming or, you can hook up your phone to your speakers or do whatever.
So many ways to stream now.
I do miss that, though, because I don't have music ownership the way you used to. I mean, I love Spotify. I like Pandora. But it's not the same as having your albums or your, you know what I mean?
There's
like a little, it's like a book. If you read a book or own a book, it's part of you then. And we've kind of lost that. Oh, well.
Yeah. Are you an album guy or a single guy?
You mean a
single song guy?
I'm an album guy.
Album guy. Yeah. See, that's.
And that's gone away, too. Now we listen to individual artists one after the other, I guess.
Yeah.
Although you can get away with that if you want. Okay. So we should talk about this Forbes.com essay, or the guy who said that Amazon Amazon bookstores should move into public libraries. I don't get his argument. I love watching people rip him down, but I don't. What was his point?
Yeah, I think people freaked out about this, as you might imagine. I think he was basically arguing that libraries are obsolete now. Amazon can just fill this void. And people sort of smacked that down pretty fast.
And this guy's a college professor, right?
Yes.
I would imagine his college has a library.
Yes, studies economics. Libraries are financed with public dollars. So he was basically saying, could we save taxpayer money
people
by not
doing
this anymore?
They can go meet at the Starbucks. They don't need to meet at the library they want now. They can download books. They don't need to go to the library. I'm really glad he wrote this because it was a great rallying cry for libraries. I was in my public library last week. I love my library.
Yeah, and that's exactly what happened. It was almost like the backlash to it was more interesting. And right. Forbes actually wound up taking the story down.
Oh, really?
People have kind of freaked out. There's 171 million registered library users. I know we were talking a little bit. Some of us use them now for audiobooks and for ebooks. There's a new app that you can get through the Chicago Public Library called Libby that makes that electronic use of the library easier. And there are a lot of people using it that way. And more importantly, there's often talk about how there just aren't that many places you can go anymore and not have to spend money. Those places are really dwindling. And, libraries, maybe parks are about all that's left.
I was interested in the story, too, because it showed how library use really peaked in 2009, which
had to be
when things got really bad.
Yeah, it did peak then. However, they aren't counting electronic use, which to me seems like maybe you want to figure out a way to count that because that's going to help with your,
All right, we got to run. My favorite microbrewery is Kings and Convicts in Highwood.
Oh, excellent.
And I know Red Eye's looking at all of those this week, right?
Red Eye's looking at, beer that's born in Chicago. So it's like a full guide to breweries in Chicago where the beer is here and the company's here. So check that out in Red Eye this week.
Andrea Haynes, nice to see you. Have a great weekend.
Thank you, Steve. You too.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve Bertrand, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
It is 12:22 here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. In the studio, Alicia Driscoll, who is the founder and CEO of Evolve Her. Alicia, welcome to the Biz Lunch.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, so tell me about Evolve Her. What exactly are we looking at here?
Yeah, so Evolve Her is a creative workspace for women. We're located over in River North, and it's a place for women to come together to really collaborate and connect with one another. And we provide a great workspace where they can co-work out of the space, but then we also have a number of events that support them in all aspects
of life. And so is this like WeWork? I mean, shared workspace?
It's similar in that aspect, but there's so much more. We don't really view ourselves as just a workspace. We're really creating this ecosystem for women. So getting to know them, understanding their businesses that they have, where their growth opportunities are, their needs personally, and then connecting them. So whether it's them transitioning out of corporate or coming over and building their business, we want to connect them with the people that will help support them.
No men.
Men are allowed to come in and visit, attend different events, but as far as memberships, we're women focused.
And why is that?
What we wanted to do was to really create this space for women to come together and support each other and to just be vulnerable. And a lot of times when you're building business, you go through these different phases to where it's hard. There's ups and downs, if anything. And to be able to really come as you are and have those conversations and ask for help, I mean, it takes a lot to put your shell down. I come from corporate where, it's heavily male dominated in the entertainment industry.
But don't men go starting their own businesses? Don't they go through that too?
I mean, 100%. And we actually, it's interesting you say that because when I launched the brand, and we're focused on women and we have so much great curriculum and education courses, we have men who are like, I would love to have access to that too. And we invite them in as well to attend those classes.
Okay, so I told you, I talked earlier on the show where I'm sorting it out in my mind. I'm allowed, right?
And, of course.
So it seems to me that if you have a gender-specific space, that you're sort of creating what we've been working against for decades.
Yeah, so I can definitely understand that opinion. Yeah,
and it's not the first time you've heard it, I'm sure.
No, and we talk about this a lot because I don't know if you know what's going on in the women's co-working space from a national
standpoint. I'm glad you brought it up, right? There's the Coven, I think, in Minneapolis. There are a few in New York. Yeah. It's really something growing.
Yeah, and so the Wing in New York, they take a little bit of a different stance. They're a fabulous company. WeWork just invested a ton of money in them. They're growing national. I think they're coming here next year in 2019. But so they don't allow men actually in the space at all. Mm-hmm. And they're very women focused and we kind of take a different approach to that, because I believe personally that the third wave of feminism, it isn't this radical bra burning type of thing that we've been through before.
Sure, sure.
It's really about coming together to move things forward, because at the end of the day, like, we need the men who support the women. Like, we need to drive cultural change. And so our stance is create that safe space, have that conversation, you know, professional, personally, and be able to listen, because with the Me Too and the Time's Up, you want to hear that, but we don't want to just talk about it. So we take that and then we go to our allies and move forward.
But it seems like to move forward we should be together, and mm-hmm. that we shouldn't be separate.
It's true that to create impact you have to be together, but I think there's an opportunity for us to have a space to listen to women, but then also listen to men. So we recently launched a program called Involve Him for Men, because it was really important for us to, A, since I've opened the space, we had so many men raising their hand and they're like, I want to A, participate, but then also those other ones who are like, I want to help women, but I'm right. walking on eggshells. Like, I don't know what to do. And we provided a space for them to come and to hear them, because it's important to hear them without the women, the women without the men, but then to come together to figure out the solution.
I'm going to ask you hopefully the most Archie Bunker question I'll ever ask on the air in my life. I'm sort of ruminating on all this. So I read a lot about how men need to learn to communicate with women, and they need to learn what, you know, women hear things differently than men do, mm-hmm. right? And so you have to convey that message, and so men should learn that. I don't hear women being told, well, men communicate different than you all do, and so women need to adapt and learn when a man says this, he might be meaning this, or it might be something like that.
I think we both need to learn how right. to listen to each other and communicate.
That was pretty Archie Bunker, I think.
It was very Archie Bunker, but I think it's important. At the end of the day, like, the drive to equality, it boils down to, like, something we were taught in grade school, right? And that's respect. And just listening to each other. And it's all about having the same opportunities. And I think from the listening to what people have to say and how do you communicate with people, there are, unfortunately, a lot of people who are still stuck in this kind of old school mentality. And that's where there's education that's needed about, you can't call people hun at work.
Right,
you can't,
right.
you know, do some of these things, which seems like common sense, but it is not. And then I think on the flip side, though, like, the program that we launched, it was really interesting because the positioning that we went in and the research that we have, it's not just men talking to women this way. There's a lot of women
talking to
women on the corporate level at the top, because women fight to get that seat at the top and then they want to hold it versus spreading the love down. Like, the guys in the corporate, they raise up their boys, you know, and that's what we should all be doing, is caring for each other.
Alicia Driscoll is the founder, CEO of Evolve Her. How do people find out more from you?
Yeah, you can visit the website at evolveher.community or follow us on social at Evolve Her.
Nice to meet you. Have a great weekend.
Nice to meet you, too. You do the same.
Now, your noontime check-in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Here's Steve Bertrand.
And here we are on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks very much for tuning in. It is 12:37 on this Friday afternoon. All right, how many of you have... I'm not going to say how many of you have cut the cable at home, because you guys know what you're doing. How many of you think you probably should, and you just haven't been able to take the step to get it done? More and more of us are. In fact, there was a study out not too long ago from eMarketer that said, I think it's this year, they think 33 million people, or maybe it's overall, 33 million people have cut the cord when it comes to cable TV, and they're getting their television entertainment from other spots. We're going to talk about that with a reporter from Mashable. Rachel Krause wrote about it. It got my attention. Rachel, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch. Oh, Rachel, I'm sorry. There we go. How are you, Rachel? Thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much. Happy to be here.
I want to hear everything you say, and it won't happen if I don't turn up your volume. So there, we're all good now. Okay, so this is
that okay?
Yeah, it's great. This is a real problem for cable companies, right? More and more of us are ditching it. What we're relying on things like Amazon or online, or just set the table for me here.
Sure, yes. So cord cutters are a huge problem for cable companies, and a new report shows that. But really, cable companies are kind of trying to attack this from all angles. And one of the things they're doing is actually working with cable companies to try to keep their customers, is actually working with online content providers to keep their customers by bundling Netflix subscriptions.
Right.
That are, you know, either for a discounted rate or for a year free, along with cable. And, you know, these are some of their biggest competitors, but unfortunately, it's just not working.
So if you listen closely, if you listen to the commercials, they'll talk about how Netflix comes with it, or, you know, and that's kind of what they're co-opting Netflix, because rather than have people go find Netflix separately, why not bring it in? That's an allure. I'm a Comcast customer, and we've got now Netflix bundled into ours. So that's sort of an example of that.
Yeah, exactly. They're trying to bring it into the cable ecosystem as a part of as instead of making it an alternative, essentially.
What is an OTT?
So an OTT is an over-the-top provider. What that means is essentially over-the-top of traditional cable. So Netflix is an OTT, Hulu is an OTT, Amazon Prime is an OTT. And it's what, you know, cable companies consider as a competitor to traditional cable.
Okay, and so the allure of these OTTs then is they're cheaper probably than the bundle or what you're going to get from cable. My worry is if I can speak from as a young baby boomer, one of the people, you know, that the cable companies probably are clinging to, you know, I wonder how I can get rid of cable and keep everything I'm watching. I probably can't, correct?
I mean, it depends really what you're watching. A lot of these cable companies have deals with Hulu and Netflix to, you know, either put on full seasons after they've already aired, or, you know, this is more of the case with Hulu, but they will show some shows that are on the air and then just have an expiration date. So there's a lot of alternatives, as well as services like YouTube and Hulu are launching their own live TV options in partnership with cable companies.
You know what, Rachel?
So cable company.
I'm sorry. Yeah. It's kind of funny because I'm talking the talk, but I'm not walking the walk. Unless I'm, you know, in the kitchen watching a political show or a baseball game, if I'm sitting down to watch a TV show, a program, I now, all really, I will say never, if I'm by myself, I never watch a show on my television. I always, and I much prefer, sitting in a chair with my computer on my lap, and I watch TV that way. So, I mean, I've kind of already made the conversion. I just haven't made the economic change.
Well, that's a great point, too, is that technology is helping with this integration as well. I watch Netflix, HBO Go, Hulu, all from my smart TV. So I'm still, you know, actually using a physical TV, but I'm going directly to the OTT providers.
Right. And so you've cut the cable, right? You don't have a basic cable package.
So my partner does, but I don't.
So you're cheating is what you're telling me.
I sometimes will use a login occasionally.
What is the, so how does it compare with what you've got if you're paying for HBO Go and Netflix and all of those things individually? You're still saving money doing it that way rather than the traditional cable?
So actually Mashable recently compared if you subscribe to Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, have a YouTube subscription, comparing it to a basic cable package, and it's cheaper for now. But these companies are raising their prices, and, you know, their subscriber bases are growing, but they're going to increase their ad revenue as well.
So it could be the sort of thing where you can be lured into doing it and then only to find out that you're not really saving that much money anyway?
Yeah, it depends how, I mean, it's going to just depend how high these OTT providers raise their rates, you know, and how many you subscribe to.
It's really funny because I have, again, I use Comcast, and so I've got the landline, which I never answer, but I mean, I don't. It's my mother-in-law uses it, and that's basically it, or the people who are soliciting. I don't answer because of the solicitors, not my mother-in-law. Okay, I want to make that clear.
Are you sure?
But it's so cheap now to keep it that it's almost cost to get, you know, they've sort of factored it in that you want to keep it that way. I love the cable service of it, but I think I've almost cut the cord without actually doing it.
Right. Well, I think the piece of the puzzle that we're missing here is really about the content. You know, it's really that these OTT providers are going head to head with cable companies when it comes to content, and they're winning. This is the first year that Netflix eclipsed HBO in the amount of Emmy nominations it received. Handmaid's Tale has been one of the most buzzed about shows all season, and you know, network and cable TV just aren't competing on the same way.
It's funny. I mean, I watch Amazon and I watch Netflix when it comes to TV shows, and that's pretty much it. So, those are the big OTTs, and Hulu is on the way up. It seems like Hulu is one of the bigger players that I don't really follow that much.
Yeah, so 2017 was a huge year for Hulu. It actually had an increase of 40% of its subscribers, and it picked up, I picked up a bunch of Emmy nominations as well, largely thanks to Handmaid's Tale.
I did watch, I did get the free month on Hulu, now that you say it, so I could watch The Handmaid's Tale. I did do that.
And it also is great for if you're someone who likes network sitcoms but doesn't want to use cable. It has a lot of the network sitcoms on there.
Rachel Krause is a reporter at Mashable. You can read more of what she writes at Mashable.com. Thanks for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I bet we hope we can talk again. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
This is the Wintrust Business Minute.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. So how many times have you worked remotely this summer? Chances are, a lot, because it's becoming pretty normal for employers to offer it to employees these days. Ryan Benici from Cranes shared a thought-provoking piece about if these times of remote working are good for employees or bad. The numbers are something else. Half of millennials believe it helps with their work-life balance, and 75% believe that it actually improves productivity. I mean, as technology becomes more seamless, the office doesn't quite need to be a part of the daily schedule sometimes.
Am I jealous because I don't have that option? Yes.
Are we going to keep going with the business minute? Of course. Hey, look at that. More IPO news. Chicago-based manufacturer Zickelman Industries is filing to go public, and despite the rising talk on tariffs, the pipe and metal maker is shooting for the stars with a $5 billion valuation. It could be appropriate because the Chicago company is the largest independent steel and tube manufacturer in the U.S. Tariffs or not, we will always keep building stuff, so let's all hope for the success of this IPO. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Okay, the number of the week this week is 5 million. The home DNA test kit, 23andMe, partnering with drug maker GlaxoSmithKline. Glaxo will use the test results from 5 million customers of 23andMe to help design new drugs. They've invested $300 million in the company. Just a reminder, customers are asked when they sign up, when they spit into the vial, if they don't mind participating in scientific research, and apparently most of you don't.
Steve Bertrand and the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
On the phone line right now is Greg McBride, a chief financial analyst at Bankrate.com. Greg joins us from time to time. Greg, welcome back to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Good afternoon, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, anytime. Okay, so you guys did a study, and I want to start generally. Look at the numbers for all of us. What we consider the best investment when it comes to long-term savings. And stocks came out top. 32% of all of us think that's probably the best place to put our money when it comes to saving for, 10 years or further into the future? That's not a surprise, right, that the stock market is first?
No, and that's entirely appropriate. So, on that basis, it's somewhat comforting to see that there's a widespread recognition of that.
But what surprised me then, I guess, is I was reading further, and it said that cash was number two at 24%, and then real estate at 22%. This sentence jumped out at me. This is the first time in 4 years respondents didn't favor real estate, which, as I just said, registered 22% in the survey. So in the past, real estate was preferred over the stock market in the survey?
Yes. Real estate had been running top spot the past several years. It did, slip this year, I think, in part. You're seeing in a lot of markets around the country, valuations are becoming a concern. You hear more and more people wondering, is this going to be the top for prices, those kind of things.
Right.
So, I think, that certainly weighed, I think, a lot on the sentiment when it comes to real estate. But, the stock market actually, we saw a bigger change in terms of how people feel about the stock market this year than we had seen in previous years, which is interesting because, in some of the previous years, the stock market made big moves from one year to the next, and yet people's feelings about it didn't change. The last 12 months, the stock market, has been largely up and down, and yet this was the year a lot of people's view of the stock market changed.
Okay, those are the numbers for all of us. Let's zero in on millennials now, which shows a particularly different picture when it comes to where millennials believe they should put their long-term savings, money they won't need for 10 years or so. 30% say in cash, right? That's the leader, is cash?
Yes, cash investments, things like savings accounts, certificates of deposit, the type of things that are entirely appropriate for short-term needs because you can't afford a loss of principal. You want to stay away from risk for short-time horizons, but the type of thing that is entirely inappropriate for long-time periods because you don't grow your buying power with those low returns.
I bring this up from time to time because it fascinates me. You know, we always talk about people of the Depression. Oh, she was a child of the Depression, so this. Is this a reflection that these were the children in many ways or the coming of age people for the Great Recession?
Absolutely, without a doubt. And I mean, I hear it and see it when I give presentations. Absolutely. And, you know, for older millennials, that was the second market meltdown they'd seen in a few short years. You know, older millennials, they saw the 2000 tech bust and then they saw the financial crisis in 08. So, yes, from both ends of the age spectrum among the millennials, I think there's a lot of natural built-in risk aversion to the market that really hasn't changed despite this 9-year-plus bull market.
It's a fascinating thing to see. But then we've got less than a minute here, Greg, but the fact is that's their opinion, but their investments don't necessarily reflect their opinion. They are more heavily in the stock market.
Well, thank God for auto enrollment and to things like target retirement plans, because if they had to pick it on their own, as the sentiment indicates, they probably wouldn't.
But if they're in the office in a workplace and then they're investing in a 401k or whatever, that tends to be stock heavy. Greg McBride, the chief financial analyst at Bankrate.com. Great to talk to you. I look forward to the next time.
Thanks a lot, Steve.